Kwandu on 702.
Polo, but Mole, ngiyabulisa lokho apendlini. Lo ume phambi kwenu, kunyawo uzophuma endlini yasekhimbili. Ndicela ukorrect izinto ezininzi. Currently, today, as things stand, there is a court order ephume izolo against the president, against a few other respondents, and they should deal primarily with the royal family. What we are seeing today, ngoku, is the decisions esingazaziyo. Makhulu, you are dishonest. Baninzi futhi abantu abadishonest eburhulumenteni. Because iyaziwa iroyal family eyonyula yambeka ubhuti. Today, laba abantu, they then choose to deal with abanye abantu ngezinto esingazaziyo. There is an acting king. Ikhona kula nansi ethu. Ndiyacela ukuxolisa. Ndiyacela izinto zikorekthwe because there is a fear yokuba if we do not present an opposing view, there will be the misconception that we are in agreement with this mess that we are seeing here. The royal family has a view, and that view must be respected. There is a court order, and the Minister of Culture and all relevant people are aware of this. So please, let us respect the royal family as things stand. Niyazi ba ikhona, I want to put it on public record, ba ikhona, the royal family is illegitimate. It can't be ba ulungiswe izinto, kugcinwe amaphakathi. That is still currently, still contesting a kingship. Yet namhlanje, they are the ones pretending to be representing us. Must be honest to go yonke lento enzeka because...
As I welcome His Majesty Prince Mbasa Sigcawu, Prince in the Amampondo Kingdom. Your Majesty, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Lord. Good evening or good night, rather, to all the listeners.
Indeed.
And thank you to you for the opportunity, you and your team.
Indeed.
And thank you. I'd like to thank the royal family that has... through the chairperson, Prince Kojayo, the spokesperson, Prince Makhakana, and ultimately the acting king of the Mbondo Nation, Prince Dumelani Sigcawu, who have allowed me to accept this invitation. I thank you.
And indeed, Your Majesty, we want to extend our condolences with regards to the passing of King Zanozuko Sigcawu. And of course, the funeral took place almost 2 days ago, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
Your Majesty, I've just played a clip that had me thinking for a very long time. And perhaps let me contextualize why I was very, very keen to have the conversation with you. And again, thank you very much for indulging us. The institution of royalty in South Africa is in trouble. Whether it is amongst the Zulu nation, whether it is amongst the Amandebele, from whence I come, amongst the Bapedi, amongst the Valuvedu, the same issues of the legitimacy of the royal families or those who ascend to the position of king or paramount chief, whatever term you want to use, seems to be in all of these royal families under major contestation. And I had some conversations with some colleagues of mine to say, but this is dangerous for the stability of our country, our people, our economy, our identity as Africans. And let me come out very clearly that I am not an aristocrat. I am not somebody who necessarily supports the idea of kings and queens. In many ways, I would be called what you call a republican. But I understand that many, many millions of Africans, not only here in South Africa, still hold very strongly to those systems. But those systems are in trouble. They cannot be trusted. In fact, your intervention at the funeral is a case in point that shows that. Tell us first of the situation in your family and the controversies that are there, and then perhaps weigh in on the issue that I'm raising at the moment.
All right. Thank you, Gov. So I will begin by stating this point, or rather this position, that we will seek to view leadership as the negotiation and resultant unity between legitimacy and power, right? And what has happened, particularly with the Amasag royal family, is that there have been instances or moments in history where a third force has come in to separate and create two different centers, where there is a center of power that is separate from the center of legitimacy. And you can see this with what happens when they want, when the colonial regime has an interest in ceding Port St. John's in Bondoland. King Nkriela refuses it to land. He continues with the anti-colonial tradition of the Bondo and African people at the time. Yet on the other side of Umzinzimu River is Nkuli Sogandamat, who belongs to the right-hand house. And he allows this to go on because he has promised an elevation, and the result would be that he would be of equal status to Nkriela on the other side. The second point comes in after the passing of King Magellan Kaskal, wherein, now, here we must premise this properly, because there is a tendency to report on this particular moment as though it begins in 1937.
Yeah.
Where we see the contestation between Prince Nelson and Prince Mandulandle Bordaskal, who was to become the first president of the Transkei, right? However, it does not begin in 1937, because when you start that analysis in 1937, you already presuppose that Prince Mandulandle, or rather the late King Mandulandle, was born of the Great House, which is incorrect. King Mandulandle was born as a Prince Mandulandle of a Kubeni House. Do you understand? Now, I want to try to leave this here so that you understand why you say the issue is that of a split and the creation by an external colonial force, where we have two centers and leadership is then shaky. Because what happens is, after the passing of King Magellan, the great wife does not have a son. And so, as per the customary mandate and powers of royal family at the time, they then follow tradition and correctly identify from the Kimberley House, which the king, the late king, and I defend. They then identify the first son of Mamchileni in the Kimberley House, a Prince Manuel Gamagelan. They take that fellow and they move him to Mzinhlovu Great Place, the royal court. Now, He encounters a very mysterious death when he is at Mzinhlovu. And then the royal family again moves to another guardian, another guardian, and that guardian would be then a Kubeni, Umaqhinela.
Your Majesty, let me stop you, because the quality of the sound is not as good as it could be, and I do want to get to the full detail of what you're saying. So let me see if I can't take a quick commercial break and see if we can't get a better line. Please indulge us. My guest is His Majesty Prince Mbasa Sigcawu, Prince in the Amampondo Kingdom.
Kwandu on 702.
My guest is His Majesty Prince Mbasa Sigcawu, Prince in the Amabondo Kingdom. Your Majesty, thank you very much for staying with us. In the interest of time and really trying to get to where this conversation is, I hope, going to get to before the end of the hour. You say to me, if I understand you correctly, and I'm not necessarily clear on the names and who the individuals are, and I think that's maybe a good thing that I don't know, but you're basically saying to me that the Amampondo people are in a contestation for the legitimate holders of the title, at least, and of course the powers and the privileges that go with that, of the legitimate king and royal family. You seem to be suggesting to me that external forces, all the way from colonial powers to present day governance, have been involved in the in the muddying of the waters in one way or the other as to which family or branch of the family is the legitimate royal family of the Amampondo people. Am I characterizing what you're saying properly?
Partially.
Okay.
Let me try to summarize it.
Yeah.
So, after their passing in 1922 of King Magellan, there have been two primary houses that are at play here. And that has been the Kimbili household and the Yehu household of Maparati, from which Bodas Trau descends. Now, you will know Bodas Trau because he was a figure in the Transkei. And that house of Maparati usurped the throne through Bodas Trau.
How?
It was with the assistance and endorsement of the colonial regime at the time. Because Bodas Trau comes from a house known as the Right Hand House, which customarily does not qualify to produce a successor to the throne. That is why after the passing of King Magellan, there was first a visit to the Kimbili house to get Maneng, who passes away.
Right.
Then there was a visit to the Ekubeni house, another Kati, who then passes away as well. And then there was a visit to Nelson's Trau, of the right-hand house, of Kimbili Royal House. At that time, Ubota is alive, and he's already in existence. He knows this himself. But then because he does not qualify, he's from a house that does not qualify customarily to produce an heir to the throne or a successor, he was disregarded. He was disregarded by the royal family at all counts. And so now you find an issue where it is that very same house of Maparati, the likes of Zululwazi, who are contesting this case even today. And that is the primary frustration, because this is well-documented history. It is known in government offices. When the late King Zanu-Zubu lodged his claim, they were the ones contesting it. They are the ones still contesting it. And yet, for some odd reason, the same royal family that elected and appointed as per their customary mandate and powers, the same royal family that elected Ukumkanu Zanu-Zubu as the legitimate king, is then disregarded by government officials like Mr. Sokoni, who I believe is in the Premier's office.
Let me understand, Your Majesty. So there's general consensus in the family and its various branches that King Zanu-Zubu's Trau was a legitimate king.
He was. It was these houses that appointed him. You must remember, there was even a time where, after the passing of our uncle, Prince Bongomini's Trau, and I'll refer to him rightfully as a prince because he was never a king. Once you acknowledge Zanu-Zubu as a king, you are essentially, by logical extension, arguing as well that Bondombini and his father, Manzo Lwandle, were never kings.
How did the Amampondo nation emerge? Where do they come from?
They come from the great nation Amampondo. They share an ancestry with Abomkhize and Amakhosibe and the like. However, I don't want to stray away from this line of thought because I fear I will then be getting into subject matter that I had not discussed with the family elders.
I see.
So I would like, if possible, to confine.
I'll tell you why I'm asking the question, and then if you're comfortable with my thinking, then you know whatever you decide, Your Majesty, as to whether you'll entertain the questions that follow after that, that'll be up to you, and I'll be comfortable with that. The reason why I asked that question about the emergence of the Amampondo people. Is because part of the mandate of this particular feature is we want to get to know the various nations and ethnic groups that make up our people in this country and where do they come from. And we've been following the emergence of various ethnic groups from the Zulu to the Tonga to the Shangaan we've been following the Amaxhosa and all of the different groups that are here. So just in terms of educational edification, we've been doing that. But I'm also interested in the idea that a particular royal family is legitimate, when in many cases we see that the very emergence of a particular nation happens through war, violence, right? Whoever has the monopoly of violence at any given time and is able to impose their will on the people at that particular time, in many instances, became the king. In some instances, we are told that they were before the politicization of kingdoms. Kings emerged as a result of spiritual choosing and prophecy and so forth. And what that does is that it places a question on the very question of legitimacy. Why is one group more legitimate than the other if the emergence of kingdoms is fundamentally as a result of the exercise of violence? If you're uncomfortable going there, I'm happy to let it go. But how come one family chooses to call itself more legitimate than others? Aren't the rules that dictate legitimacy a privilege that they enjoy because they are in power?
No. All right. So I'm honestly not entirely comfortable with this line of questioning. However, I will try to provide a bit of insight.
Sure.
You'll remember that at the beginning, I put to you that we understand leadership as a negotiation between power and legitimacy. And so what happens is, if these two are in constant negotiation,
yes,
and successfully so, then you have a solid leadership. And that then translates into a unity of purpose within one, the leadership structure itself, which would be the royal family,
yeah,
and two, the nation.
Yeah.
That is why for generations of Amabondo existence, there weren't any of these issues. I mean, King Makgelane led a program that increased the number of schools,
yes,
in the Bondoland region. We have Holy Cross Hospital through the efforts of the royal family of King Makgelane. This is just an example.
Yeah.
However, when there was that split, and this is where legitimacy comes in, when there is that split, we see what ends up leading into the Bondo Revolt, where there were murders. We see what happens with the Ingusa Hill Massacre. Because then there is a split between a center of power, which is completely different from what is understood and accepted as per the customs of the people as a center of legitimacy.
Yeah.
Now, you will further understand that when I pose all of this, when I argue this, I am saying essentially that you have all of these houses. I'll give you an example. The chairperson of the royal family, the structure that elected and appointed King Zanuzu, is Prince Kojuano. We also have the House of Shamandan. We also have within the royal family the House of Thoni. These are several royal houses of the Amabondo kingdom, of the Amabondo royal family.
And customarily,
different houses, and there is only one house that stands in opposition.
Right.
And it remains the same House of Bodas Clau. So how do you then argue that the entire nation, as well as the royal family,
yeah,
are all incorrect because of one single house?
Yeah. So let me slow down, Your Majesty. So some of these things are a little bit hard for some of us to understand. So the process is that the various royal family branches are the ones that have the privilege of appointing a king? Is that how it works?
That's correct. Let me provide further clarity.
Okay.
King Zanuzu is found by the Nhlapo Commission to be the legitimate king of Amabondo.
Yes.
Not Amabondo of the East, as Namasi points out incorrectly, and of Amabondo altogether. However, the commission can only make a recommendation. The next step, therefore, is that as per the customs of Amabondo, the royal family must pronounce and appoint him. And it was that royal family that agreed and that pronounced and elected that, no, Zanuzugo should hold the throne.
Right.
That is, he is on record as saying that. Zanuzugo's mother is on record as saying that.
Right.
Now,
So just before you continue, Your Majesty, just for my own understanding. So the appointment of a king is not necessarily a matter of somebody being the firstborn son of the king and the wife, and I'll use this term for lack of a better term, but of the candle wife. And I'm sorry to use that term because I understand that it's not an appropriate term, but just for the benefit of my listeners, there is the wife that is understood to be the wife that will bear the heir of the nation. So it isn't automatic that the candle wife will be the bearer of the heir. So there has to be some sort of family deliberation as to who then ascends in the unfortunate case of the death of the king?
Yes, the royal family, because you must understand this. The kingship belongs to the royal family, not the individual who is the king at the time. That is why there are provisions for even for the case where the great house or the great wife cannot or does not produce a male successor. That is why you have the houses known as Amagadi. And from those houses, it is the royal family that will elect. That is why there is even a particular estate where the king will be housed and groomed for the kingship. That is where a king goes. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I do, Your Majesty.
Once you are in that estate.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you see, I've had other conversations where I've been led to believe that it's not even a matter of negotiation. It is very clear. This is the heir is the firstborn son of the wife in the great place, in the main. So the wife, the candle wife. Again, I'm using that term. My apologies. But that
it would appear that way.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. It would appear that way because that is the son who would get first preference. However, that's the son who gets first preference, and if things are normal, then that is the son who the royal family would, under normal circumstances, end up electing to be the king.
Right.
However, it remains the prerogative of the royal family because remember, the kingship is of the royal family. It is not of that particular king. So that's why even today, when you speak of Mzinhle of royal craft, it is under the custodianship of the royal family at all material times, customarily. And whoever moves into that estate, whoever moves into Mzinhle of royal craft, moves there, and then their royal family, their core. So when Umbasa moves from Kimberley, this is an example. If Umbasa moves from Kimberley to Mzinhle, Umbasa is no longer Mbasa of Kimbi. He is Mbasa of Mzinhle.
Yeah, sure. But
the royal family.
And is this understanding held by everybody in the royal family?
Held by everybody. Hence, when Nelson is evicted from Mzinhle, when Nelson's trial of King Makgelane is evicted, there's a huge outcry from throughout the nation. That is why even the colonially endorsed inauguration of Port of Power had to be there with military personnel, with police personnel. There were guns there. It wasn't a celebratory affair. It wasn't a jovial affair among the nation, as would any inauguration of someone who would be leading the nation. Because the nation understood that there was illegitimacy at play. And and if you want to understand this, you must understand it against the backdrop of the speech made by Cecil John Rhodes at the second reading of the Glen Grey Act in 1894.
Yes.
Where he packs out the issues that he wants to address as far as the natives, issues relating to land, how natives have to be tied to labor, and that can only be achieved primarily by reducing the land that they own.
Yes.
And you will see how from then the Transkei, the Bondoland region, becomes nothing but a huge labor reserve for Gauteng.
Yeah.
And for the Cape.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is all part of a plan because hence I say the split of the leadership of the nation into a center of power that does not necessarily hold legitimacy is so that center of power can then be stoogified to achieve the ends of that colonial regime.
How, Your Majesty, is legitimacy established. I'm almost comfortable to understand how power is established. I imagine that military power has something to do with that. Economic power has something to do with the issue of power. How is legitimacy in this duality of the balance of power? How is it achieved? How do we decide that you are legitimate?
It has to be in line with the traditions and customs of the people, of the nations. How do you say today that such and such is the legitimate president of the country? It had to be within the confines of the constitution and the governance rules of the country.
Sure.
Which were, there is an election that is the system that is widely accepted and understood and followed by all people to say a president of the country will be elected.
I understand that in a constitutional democracy. I'm trying to understand and establish the concept of legitimacy in a monarchy where we don't have an election. In other words, we don't have a democratic process where all of the people go and vote for a king. A king is appointed. How do you establish legitimacy?
A king is appointed by the royal family. However, I do not believe that there is an absence of points in time historically where people have either clans have waged war against a particular kingship to voice out dissatisfaction, or B, either chosen or B, chosen to actually leave that kingdom. These are things that happen. So legitimacy, again, is a social contract, just as legitimacy in a democracy, a constitutional democracy, is a social contract.
I understand your argument theoretically. I get it. What I'm looking for is how does the Mbondo Nation, arrive at the conclusion that a particular family enjoys legitimacy? And that would, I suppose, for my ignorance, help me if you could say to me that it happens as a result of an election that is traced back to a particular time or a war. Or how does the Amambondo people say that I get power, because that happens in many, many different ways. But I'm really, really trying to understand the legitimacy question. How does that emerge? How do you argue this is legitimate?
Look, I think we're going to have a bit of a difficulty here, because you want to have something that is similar to the confines of what today is understood as a constitutional democracy.
Yeah.
However, the people have never been out of ways to voice their dissatisfaction. I mean, I know, for example, with Amampondo, there have been several chieftaincy appointments where the men were not concerned, the community was not content and voiced out their dissatisfaction. There are several ways. However, if that does not happen, they understand that these appointments and these proceedings are in line with the traditions and customs of Amampondo, and then therefore they endorse them. Because remember, it speaks to a unity of purpose. It speaks to a unity of vision that comes from the fulfillment of that negotiation between leadership and between power and legitimacy. So you cannot lead primarily just by being a center of power if you are not deemed to be in line with the customs and rules of the people. Just as you cannot go on to say you are a legitimate president of a country if you are not a holder of the mandate given by the people through means that they accept and know and follow.
I accept that, and I'm not going to belabor it, Your Majesty, because I can see it's an issue. But is that not where the controversy finds its life? In other words, is that not where those who would and not just for Amampondo, but for any royal family, is that not where the controversy arises? Where people are actually challenging the legitimacy and the tenets that have created the language that would give a young prince such as yourself the ability to say that this is an illegitimate situation? In other words, if I were to look at the Amandebele, for example, or AmaZulu or Waluweru, that seems to be the issue, that somebody feels that they can challenge the legitimacy of a particular king or royal family because the issues of legitimacy are not finalized. You've made the example. You make the example of, for example, an election in a constitutional democracy. I'm trying to get to that place that says, on the basis of this agreement, this is where we draw our argument to say that we are the legitimate ones.
Again, Darby,
yeah.
Look, if you feel as though there's an issue of legitimacy or a dispute, then you have to lay it against the priesthood of the traditions and customs of those people. Now, in our case, the traditions and customs of our people have always held that it is the royal family's prerogative, and that royal family is always at all material times known. I'll give you an example again. When Princess Lombeyisa was given the regency of Gauteng, the late king himself writes a letter to the MEC, Umlibo Qobosiyane, to say that thing is illegitimate because these houses, he lists them. He says these houses were not part of the revolution.
Yes.
And as per our custom, these are the relevant houses that would be, that constitute the royal family that has the mandate of making such appointments.
Yes.
And therefore, that thing should be nullified. And because this is something that is widely known and understood and accepted by the people, it is understood and also accepted that it is the legitimate decision to make.
And if there is this consensus, Your Majesty, if there's this agreement, this understanding, this wholesalely accepted understanding of the legitimacy of a particular family, and the general royal family, why is it that we even have anybody within the royal family circles challenging issues of legitimacy, which is why you rose to correct certain things, as you said?
I rose because the primary problem is that all the houses of Amafago are in unison. All those houses are in identity as far as understanding the roles of the world. It is only one house. That's why I even mentioned that while Umbasa is Sigcau, our chairperson is from the House of Sigcau. That is another one of our houses.
Yes.
Our spokesperson is from the House of Toli, for example. You have the House of Hlamandani. All of these houses are represented in that royal family. Yet there's only one family, and that happens to be the family that was a huge beneficiary of the colonial system, the colonial and apartheid system, to the exclusion of the rest of the nation.
Yeah. And so they are the family that has been... And they are the family, this one family that has gone rogue, as it were, are the family that had, sway over the proceedings together with government, which is the issue that you were raising, to say, but there is a court order in this particular matter. You're saying that that particular family that was seen to be leading the proceedings in the burial of the king, that continues to enjoy certain benefits that come from colonial apartheid sort of backgrounds, continues to enjoy that pole position in the family?
That is correct. And you will understand, if you look at what is in line with the tradition of, with the political tradition of the legitimate kings of Amabond, you will understand that this is a royal family and a nation that had always taken an anti-colonial stance. It would then defy logic, it creates a paralysis of logic to then have someone who is a king of that very nation supporting and being even to the point of being a president of an institution such as the Transkei. He was a beneficiary of that very system that his own forefathers fought against. King Makgelane was one of the founding members of the ANC. King Sigcau as well was arrested on Robben Island for resisting colonial laws. King Mkhekela, who is the father of King Tsau, was also at issue with, such that the kingdom was split by the colonial regime into an eastern and western Pondoland because he refused with the land at Port St. John.
I imagine, though, you would accept that the fight against colonial powers, regimes, and influence cannot be the only decider as to legitimacy.
It cannot be the only decider, but yeah. I'm simply making an example to illustrate that we have one house in this family that enjoyed a huge number of a huge amount of colonial backing, and is that same house today that has given us problems. All the other houses are in agreement with the position of the royal family because they form part of the royal family.
So now, what is the status? What is the status quo now since the His Majesty King Zanozugo Tsau has passed on? Who is now regent or acting king? And what is the reason for that situation? Is it because government has endorsed it, or is it because of the family? Who is now the king of the Amambon?
So, what we see at the funeral of King Zanozug is Ndamase, who, after the commission, was a deemed king, which means after his passing, his son can never be a king, because you must remember there was never a contestation of superiority or greatness between Ndamase and Mkhekela. It has always been known that Ndamase is of the right-hand house, Mkhekela is of the great house. Ndamase then says he is the king, and he's going to declare who must be the caretaker of Amambond. It makes zero sense. It is incorrect. He knows he is a junior. Ndamase knows he is a junior house to Kaug. He understands this.
He's
playing politics primarily to legitimate the royal family in support of the very same house because. And I say this to say, the position of the royal family that appointed King Zanozug is that there is an acting king. There cannot be a regency because a regent suggests that a successor has been identified and is known. Now, at this particular point in time, I know of no male issue for King Zanozug.
Yeah.
Unless there is that we just do not know of. I do not know King Zanozug of having a male issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
does he have daughters?
These are things that are to be discussed by the royal family.
Yeah.
Now, these are not things that can be led or discussed properly within a context where the royal family is being undermined by a government that is continuing, well, not necessarily even a government, a few government appointees that are continuing to undermine that royal family, primarily for the elevation of the same house that had usurped the throne after the passing of King Mantlonge in 1937.
What's at stake here, economically? I mean, what does this illegitimate family or this king enjoy just in terms of influence, power, and economic in economic terms?
Look, that would be me veering off into the arena of speculation and things that I do not believe I had discussed.
Would you be happy to say that there are economic benefits?
Look, you will be truthful in saying when you look at the Bondoland region, it is a typical example of the even and uneven development model of apartheid and colonialism, where it had been for a long time nothing but a labor reserve. And so the Bondoland region is a region of huge economic potential. And whatever development that is to go on in that region is obviously something that is important, that would need a collaborative effort from all stakeholders. Now, I will not then go into speculating and say this particular person or this particular party has this much of a portion or this cut in whatever economic interest they are, because that is not my role today.
I hear.
My role is to provide clarity on why I ended up intervening the way I did at the funeral.
Which Your Majesty.
Because the royal family had been compromised and undermined by the government, and we had to provide.
Is there a way forward after that intervention?
A way forward is that the royal family will, through its spokesperson, communicate that.
Yeah.
So you will be hearing from Zondi Nimakhakane, if you're still following the story. We will reach out at a point in time where the royal family is willing to articulate its position.
Sure.
But the family is in deliberations and talks about what has happened.
Your Majesty.
I would like to correct.
Yeah.
I would like, if you allow me, to correct one thing. There has been the rumor that, or not even the understanding correctly, that Umbasa is airing out the family's dirty laundry on a public platform. I would like to say that is an incorrect analysis. What Umbasa was frustrated is government in collaboration with one particular house of the entire royal family to undermine the royal family. It was one particular house of the Amampondo royal houses.
Surely, you would accept, your Highness, that some may interpret that as the hanging of family dirty laundry?
No, it's not. If you remember, I say specifically that there are dishonest people in the government who are compromising us and compromising the royal family and the funeral proceedings because they understand who the legitimate royal family is. I don't even go as far as naming people.
Sure. No, okay. Let me say this, Your Majesty, because we've run out of time. I've encroached into news time. But one, I want to thank you for agreeing to talk to us. Yes, we will follow the story. Three, we would most definitely be available to have a conversation with the Prince, the spokesperson of the family, and any other clarifications that you might want to give us. But for now, we've run out of time. And once again, I thank you very much for your time and your indulgence. Prince Mbasa Straw, thank you so much for joining us, Prince of the Amampondo Kingdom.